T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Taking a look back at the draft, it's Will Palachuk and Thomas Mott
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Good morning and welcome on a Sunday following the NFL draft. Willie P and Thomas Mott in the building here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and wherever you might be following us in on the radio.com app. We are excited to be with you and excited to have something real to talk about again, because I know the last month and a half for a lot of you has really been tough with the devoid of sports and all the other things that are going on in our country. And it was nice to get that release over the last 3 days to have something really to latch on to and enjoy with the NFL draft. I thought it was put on expertly by the folks at ESPN and the NFL Network. And I'm also pleased because I get to reunite with my guy who I haven't talked to in about a month and a half. My guy, Thomas Mott. I'm surprised that my number was still on your phone, fam.
Man, listen, I have not been on the air here at 92.9, I think in a month and a half. And like you just said, I haven't talked to you. I'm talking to Dylan Matthews right now. I got to talk to Jahi producing that last show. It's just good to be back on the air. And also, like you said, to have some real sporting events to talk about. Man, the NFL draft was fun.
What have you been doing with yourself the last month and a half?
So I've actually been doing not a lot. I've been working some other jobs from home, doing some other broadcast coverage stuff of other teams. But my other main job that I do has actually been paying me to do nothing, which has been a huge blessing. I'm telling you, I am so relaxed right now. I wake up at 9:30 every single day, get a little work done. I relax some more. It's been nice. What have you been up to?
Just some independent voiceover stuff. I caught a commercial for a horse racing company the other day, which
there you
was
go.
Nice.
All right.
Other than that, it's been a lot of cooking, a lot of runs to the liquor store. It's basically been my life. And the one thing that I don't like is that my gym is still closed. You know, with all the stuff that like reopened yesterday, they didn't reopen our gym. So like this would have been like a perfect weekend. You know, get some gym body stuff going. Oh, yeah. Maybe go to the pool. Yeah, we don't have that yet.
I've been playing a ton of 2K19 with my roommate. We have a record that we post on our wall of 2K wins and losses. Let me just tell you, before we get to the NFL draft, 2K19 is the most infuriating game I've ever played in my entire life. It's the worst.
You didn't remember playing Madden when they had Michael Vick in the game.
No, I was a little too young.
That was infuriating, because basically we had a rule in our little group of friends that you can't use the Falcons. You just can't use the Falcons because Michael Vick was a cheat code.
Right.
When he was with the Falcons, especially the year that he had his face and name on the cover, that was the real best year for that. But as far as the cover of what we will talk about today, the Falcons draft picks yesterday, Friday, and Thursday all had one thing in common. Actually, they had two things in common. One, they all filled imperative needs for the football team. But the other one, Thomas, and I think this is something that you could talk about with all the picks, with the exception of maybe the first round pick in A.J. Terrell, they all have versatility. They have malleability. Marlon Davidson of Auburn can play inside and outside on the line. Matt Hennessy can go from guard to center. Michael Walker, the Fresno State linebacker, he can play inside and outside. Jalen Hawkins has played multiple positions in his college career. And Sterling Hoffrichter, the Syracuse punter, also did the kicking duties at Syracuse. They expect him to punt with the Falcons and maybe also do kickoff duties for Atlanta. But that's the one thing that I get, and I think Thomas Dimitroff said this yesterday too, is that we wanted to make sure that we have versatility. I know that they use the phrase a lot in basketball where they talk about positionless basketball. The thing about the Falcons is they have positionless players who can be wreckers on the field come this upcoming season.
I was talking to producer Dylan Matthews right before we came on the air about the Falcons' overall draft. It feels like almost a surprise that we have nothing to complain about. For a city in Atlanta that loves to be upset at their Falcons, right? Let's be honest. We are very critical of our Atlanta Falcons. You look at the draft, you go, okay, well, we filled the need of pass rusher. We got a cornerback. Okay, we got another a center to replace Alex Mack. It feels like the Falcons did everything that they needed to do. The only thing I think Falcon fans are a little bit hesitant on is A.J. Terrell in the first round, only because Javon Kinlaw was so close. Javon Kinlaw starts to fall, and you go, oh, my goodness, okay, well, we think that Denver is going to take a wide receiver. That leaves Kinlaw there, and then San Francisco crushed our dreams. But other than that, I've seen very little complaining from Falcon fans, which I'm impressed by, and I agree with this was a good draft.
Well, here's the other part of the Kinlaw thing, The problem with the way the draft is structured is that it allows for an overreaction Friday. Like after the first round is over, you think, oh my goodness, I can't really see the big picture. I can't see the forest for the trees because you only have one pick to react on. And like you said, you know, having Kinlaw sitting there, I think we all salivated at the opportunity to try and get him. You know, he's a guy I covered. I saw every college snap of his, including all the ones he did where he basically wrecked Georgia's offensive line earlier this year. But I think that you got the impression from Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, and they wouldn't tell you otherwise, even if it was true, but they wanted a cornerback right away. They felt like the top shelf of corners, when you think about Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson, and A.J. Terrell, they felt like that top shelf of corners, there was a significant drop going down to guys like Damon Arnett, Christian Fulton, and Trevon Diggs. Those were guys who wouldn't necessarily have the kind of impact that Terrell added. And the thing about Terrell is that he's a guy who, aside from maybe one or two games he played in college, was a flawless shutdown half of the field type corner. I know the last impression of him against LSU wasn't great, but this is a guy who got the pick six in the game against Alabama. He had plenty of great moments that I saw at Clemson. And the other part of this, and I think the real trademark of a corner is that people threw him to the other side. Like, he had a situation in college where in his final season, the guy playing opposite him was a first-year corner in Darion Kendrick, somebody who switched positions to basically play opposite Terrell. That was how barren the Clemson secondary was on the boundary, is that they had to take a guy from the offense, put him on defense to play opposite A.J. Terrell. So A.J. didn't get a lot of run during the 2019 season because all they were trying to do was pick on the other guy, the run pick.
The funniest part about the NFL draft, too, from a fan's perspective, and again, we talk on the air about the draft, so we spend, I would say, a lot more time preparing, but we're still in a fan standpoint of, okay, we watch ESPN, we watch what their experts are saying, we're kind of watching some highlights maybe on YouTube and stuff, and so we get caught up in what players did bad when they were on the field. So like you said, sure, you go back to the Clemson LSU Natty, right? It's like, oh my goodness, Ja'Marr Chase absolutely obliterated A.J. Terrell. 9 catches, 221 yards. This is not a guy you should take at number 16 overall. That's a great receiver, torching him. And then you go, okay, well, what about the rest of his entire career? Like you just mentioned, at Clemson, he was great. He's a shutdown corner. This is a great pick at number 16 overall. And guess what? The NFC South, you know, this little spoiler alert, has a lot of wide receiver and passing talent that we now have to deal with, a.k.a. Tom Brady and all those guys down there, and then New Orleans. You're going to deal with that for the next, what, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years? I mean, even with Brady and Breeze, obviously, on the latter ends of their career, you had to go ahead and stop wide receivers, and the Falcons did just that at number 16.
And the other part, I think that was the biggest thing, I talk about the overreaction Friday, is that there was a lot of people who were angry about the fact that the Falcons did not go get a pass rusher. Well, they made that clear on Friday. They wanted to be stronger up the middle and stronger with a pass rush, and they get a guy in Marlon Davidson. And I've been saying this all weekend. This guy's got some nasty to him. Like, we've heard the quote that was played with him at the combine here over the course of the last couple of days, and people have had a chance to really grab and hold on to it. He is somebody who, his give-a-darn meter is busted. Like, he just goes in and he just makes plays. He lives in the backfield. He can play inside and outside. I think you're going to have him line up between Grady Jarrett and Tack McKinley, maybe even bump outside on some passing downs. This is a guy who I think is going to be an immediate starter and somebody who I think can really transform, along with Dante Fowler, this Falcons pass rush, which was second to last in the league a year ago.
Davidson is the most interesting pick the Falcons had, and you can kind of take what I just said about Terrell and apply it to Marlon Davidson, because you put on a little bit of film and you go, wait a second, wasn't he playing next to Derrick Brown, who was drafted earlier, and everyone said Brown was better, and he's a little bit bigger, so he's not like a pure defensive end in a 3-4 and a 4-3 pass rushing situation. And then you watch the film, you start talking to some experts. Everyone I said kept saying Gerald McCoy. They kept saying, think Gerald McCoy, just a lot younger and a lot raw, but that is who you could potentially get. And like you said, you line him up inside next to Grady and then Tack on the outside, but he can also move around and play defensive end as well. This pick, I think, shows they got the best pass rusher they thought was available, but I think it also shows they're trusting and hoping that Dante Fowler turns out to be really, really good on the defensive end side, because if Fowler is good, and you got Grady and now Davidson up the middle, and then Tack, obviously, as the other pass rusher. This defensive line is not the best in the league. It's probably not even, you know, the 10th best in the league. But it's up there, and I think would be a lot better than what the Falcon fans have been seeing the past couple of years.
One of the biggest reasons the Falcons started 1-7 a year ago, Thomas, is the fact that they had inconsistent play on defense. But when Dan Quinn was talking about the way that those first two picks went, it transforms the back end, and it also transforms the front four.
I certainly expect immediate impact from these guys. And the reason being is seeing these guys, their traits, and really came from like really big, you know, they were big high school recruits going into college and being big recruits in that space and performing at a really high level. So for both Marlon and for AJ, they've really hit a lot of the markers from being excellent high school players, going into college, being excellent college players, competing at excellent levels against top competition. Those usually are guys that transfer well into the NFL.
That, of course, is head coach Dan Quinn after taking Marlon Davidson there. And hey, what? SEC player, right? We're in SEC country. You get your SEC player. It's almost the easiest hype in the book to say, well, listen, we've got an SEC player who obviously plays against other SEC players, has played against the best. It's very easy to sell Falcon fans on Marlon Davidson there in round two.
The only pick of the first three that I kind of have a little bit of a question mark on is Matt Hennessy, not for anything other than the fact that, again, the battle-tested nature. You mentioned the fact that you had an SEC player in Marlon Davidson. You had a guy who played in multiple championship games in A.J. Terrell. My only question is about Hennessy, about whether or not he has the ability to go against these big-time defensive linemen he's going to see. I don't know what his role is going to be right off the bat, if they are going to try and have him compete for the starting left guard spot or just attach him to Alex Mack and make him be a sponge for the rest of this offseason. But if anything else, you got somebody at each of the positions of need. You got somebody in Michael Walker who can replace Devondre Campbell. You got Jalen Hawkins who can give you some extra safety, pardon the pun. And then, of course, the punter, Sterling Hoffrichter, who is going to compete with the starting punter job, I should say.
As you start to look at the third round, you mentioned Hennessy, and you kind of go, okay, you can see him, you know, the Alex Mack replacement down the line. Whenever that happens, maybe he competes at the left guard spot. Although you look then in the third round at other players taken around where the Falcons pick, and that's kind of how I do it. It's like, okay, who could we have had if we went a different route? You start to look around, there isn't much that really would have turned heads. Like the majority of the big name guys that Falcon fans would have gone, oh yeah, that guy, you get him in the third round, that's great. They were already gone up to that point. You see the Falcons drafting for value here and drafting for what will be a need sooner rather than later. And that's something we'll talk about coming up here in about 15 minutes. The later round draft picks are, you know, are they going to start this year and be big impact players? Probably not. But you can see it's a new need that will be happening sooner rather than later. So get it fixed now.
The name Ryan Allen was the one I was looking for there. For some reason, I couldn't have it on the, had it on the tip of my tongue. We'd love for you to join us. 404-741-0929 is how you can get in touch with me. You can also talk to me on Twitter at Willie P Style. You can talk to Thomas at Real Thomas Mott. The radio station is at 929 The Game. And we also want to send a special thank you to the fine folks at Twin Peaks who've sponsored all of our NFL draft coverage throughout the weekend. Twin Peaks is your home for the 2020 NFL season. I don't like to give grades, Thomas, but the one thing that I will say is that if you had a goal that was a need-based draft for the Falcons, they got everybody they needed to get as far as players they needed in order to be on the field for 2020.
There's one position group I wish that they would have gone in. We'll try to talk about that in the next segment. There's only one, though, so I'd still give it, if you want a grade, I don't like grades either, a B+, I guess. I mean, that's the thing. Every single team's draft could potentially be good if the players turn out to be good. We have no idea.
Mm-hmm. First time since 2013 that they don't take a running back, wide receiver, or tight end. First time since 2009 that they don't take an offensive skill position player of any kind. That was the year, of course, that they took my guy, Willie Moe, a.k.a. Moe City, the man out of Hayti, Missouri, William Moore. Still ahead, we will talk about everything that happened on day three of the draft, including the slide for two former Georgia quarterbacks. Willie P., Thomas Mott here with you. We take you all the way until 2 in the afternoon. We're also going to talk to some head coaches of the Falcons draft picks coming up later on in the program. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and always available via the radio.com app on your smart speakers and smartphones.
The draft is over, and Will and Thomas have a look back
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic back on the air here as the final show this weekend to recap the draft before, of course, all of our normal guys are back on the air on Monday, and they'll give you their thoughts on what the Falcons did. And overall, they're through segment number one. Will and I agree, right? This is a pretty darn good draft from the Falcons, and there's not much to complain about if you're a Falcons fan. But if, of course, you want to jump on the air with us and discuss, 404-741-0929. And Will, we mentioned going into that break, take a quicker look at day three, the later round draft picks, rounds 4 through 7 yesterday, which honestly I was watching, felt like it was the longest draft of ever. Rounds 4 through 7 took so long to get all the way through. But alas, the Falcons had a couple of picks there. And really, the ones to focus on here are the fourth rounders, Michael Wilson and Jalen Hawkins, the linebacker and safety. And as I mentioned earlier on, I want to get your thoughts on this. It feels like these are maybe not immediate plug-and-play starters, as most fourth-rounders aren't. Maybe Michael Walker in there, obviously, for the departed Devondre Campbell. But you can see, looking forward, looking ahead at the linebacker spot, looking ahead at the safety spot, these are picks that should be able to develop under the defensive, watchful eye of Dan Quinn, and hopefully eventually, right, turn it into starters.
And I know that people will look at these two picks with a very careful eye. The one thing you have to understand about the way the Falcons structured this draft is that not having a fifth or sixth round pick, they really could not deviate from their board based on their needs. So I know people like to use the term reach. I hate when that gets used because everybody's board is different. Everybody's needs are different. And with the way that there is the amount of pressure on Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn to get this thing right, they really didn't have any time to worry about outside criticism or nationally driven criticism of, you know, oh, this guy should have gone in the fifth or sixth round. We didn't have a fifth or sixth round pick. So you basically had two fourth round picks, those last opportunities for you to get guys who can plug into positions of need. I think Walker fits basically like a player like for like for Devondre Campbell, somebody who has the ability to play inside, but also has the ability to play outside. This tells me that they're going to do something similar to a 4-2-5 base defense with five defensive backs basically out there all the time, basically having a permanent nickel, especially when you think about the fact that Kendall Sheffield is back there in that crowded secondary. You basically have him play that slot corner. You have Terrell and Oliver on the outside. Rico Allen, Keanu Neal, and Demonte KZ will all be kind of that trio that rotates at the safety position. And then you could have either Deion Jones, Foye Oluokun, and the rotation in of Michael Walker in at linebacker, among others who might be able to be brought in as undrafted free agents or otherwise. And that tells me that they're also going to put a premium on what those front four are going to do because of getting a guy like Marlon Davidson, and you have Tyler Davison as well on the inside and the interior, and other guys on that defensive line. This is going to be a team that is more built around those type of players that can go sideline to sideline, and I think Walker fits that bill very well.
With you on that one, and so does GM Thomas Dimitroff. Here's what he had to say about the two fourth round draft picks.
I will say it was really interesting how, you know, round two and round three played out today. We were really excited. It seems almost even more than other years, where it felt really strong that there were a lot of people there that we really had on our board, so to speak. And I think that we still have a number of guys that we're interested in at a number of different areas, both offensively and defensively. And those two fourth round picks are attractive to us right now. Not saying that other people may not want to move up and we would consider, but we're pretty honed in on what we're looking for in the fourth with those two fours.
Let me ask you this, Will, in terms of later round draft picks right now regarding our Atlanta Falcons. The one position group that I felt like I would have liked to see them address, and I know we had limited draft picks, and obviously I'm still a big fan of everything that they did, was the running back spot. I remember before a lot of our late night shows were kind of put on hold due to COVID-19. I was one of the ones who championed, guys, get a running back, even after you went out and signed a guy like Todd Gurley, who, listen, I get the Georgia connection, but I'm not really a big fan of it just because of what does that knee look like? Can the knee hold out for 16-plus games? I would have liked a running back in a draft class that wasn't elite at running back. I mean, they had some good ones at the top, but that was the one position group that maybe you could have snuck one more in there just to provide some backup support if this whole Todd Gurley experience doesn't actually turn out.
Yeah, neither Swift nor Taylor were on the board for them at the number 15 slot in the draft. I know Cam Akers was still on the board for them. He is somebody who a lot of mocks linked to the Falcons. But the thing about it is that, you know, they have a pretty crowded running back room right now as it is between Todd Gurley, Ito Smith, Brian Hill, and Kadri Allison. And I really don't think that we've seen the full repertoire of what Kadri Allison can do at running back yet. I think that he was limited by opportunity and guys in front of him. There was also a speculation that he wasn't as good in pass pro, so he can develop that in this offseason. I think that there's still they still can get through this season with the running backs they have in this room. And the other part of this is that we also don't have the full list of the undrafted free agents from the Falcons' perspective. We should get that at some point later on today. The Falcons did say that they're going to release the list of the 18 players that they got. And there are some running backs on that list that they could possibly bring into camp with the I think they with the 18 that they signed, they're still under the 90 limit. So they could still possibly bring somebody else in if they want to come before training camp. And that's the other part of this that I find very interesting, because I want to believe that Todd Gurley can hold up during a 16-game season, and maybe you can see the emergence of Smith or Hill, but I just did not want to sacrifice the needs elsewhere to go and take a running back who you're going to have to commit to long-term.
Other picks that were kind of interesting in the later rounds, and really the ones that we want to focus in here, being in Atlanta and being here in Georgia, were the two Georgia quarterbacks, right? Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. Boy, they were... The TV cameras were on Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason all throughout night number two, going, oh my gosh, when are they going to go? And both of them going on day three. Obviously, Eason goes first, number 122 overall, to the Indianapolis Colts, which to me is a fantastic pick and a fantastic draft by the Colts. We'll get to that a little bit later. And then Jake Fromm, a man that we talk about a ton here at this station, a guy I've been very critical of during my time here at 92.9. And I'm not going to say I was vindicated with how far he fell in the NFL draft, but the fifth round, 167 overall, he goes to the Buffalo Bills. It kind of felt like what a lot of people have been saying about Jake Fromm. He's a backup at best in the National Football League, and that's what Buffalo views him as.
I think you're thinking about two mutually exclusive thoughts here when it comes to Jake Fromm. Number one, you can believe that he is not an NFL talent. At the same time, you can also believe that it was the right decision for him to go inside the NFL draft. I was one of the people who understood it right away. I never want to fault a guy for going and getting his money, but what was he going to do with another season at Georgia that was going to change the minds of him? This, in my opinion, it vindicates the people who said that he shouldn't go. Now maybe you could say if he stays another year, he can put himself in a better situation with a different quarterback crop. But as far as going back to Georgia and getting anything there that he couldn't have gotten with a year inside the league, I don't necessarily think you could have done anything more at Georgia that changed his status. He now gets to play a year in Buffalo. He gets to be paid to do it, which I think is the one thing that people always forget about. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, the college players, they don't get any money for this stuff. They have to be able to make a living at some point in their career, too. And so that part of it, I think, is easily understandable. I don't necessarily disagree with the fact that he slid, but I also think this is still okay for him because of the fact that he really didn't have any other option. And I think, too, from Georgia's perspective, look at the way they've handled things since he left. They went out and got one of the top grad transfer quarterbacks in Jamie Newman out of Wake Forest, and they go and get the number one quarterback in the 2021 class in Brock Vandegrift, they're set at that position, I think, a lot better than they would have if Fromm had come back.
I saw a tweet from Georgia, like right after Jake Fromm was officially drafted from the NFL, and it says built between the hedges, and it shows a bunch of the former Georgia quarterbacks who have been taken in the NFL draft. It shows Fromm, it shows Stafford, and David Green, and Aaron Murray, and DJ Shockley, and someone quote tweeted and said, this is like an Avengers movie poster, but with nothing but Hawkeyes. Like, it's just a bunch of Hawkeyes all around, because in reality, right? I mean, I guess Matt Stafford is the best Georgia quarterback to be taken in a long time. Listen, I wish Jake Fromm all the best. I know a lot of people are tweeting at me right now saying, oh, you know, Tommy, you just hate Jake Fromm. You're not a Jake Fromm guy. Listen, I just called it as I saw it this year at Georgia. I thought that that arm strength is why Eason went ahead of him. I think the Colts looking at Jacob Eason, getting a guy like Phillip Rivers on their squad who has 1, 2, maybe 3 years left, they can now develop a guy who has the quarterback traits, the size and the height and the strength and obviously the arm talent. And now I think Eason's set pretty good to maybe be the future of Indianapolis if they don't want to go with Jacoby Brissett.
It's hard to look at Eason and not believe that he can get it right. You know, I think that the one thing that was his issue is something that can be inside his control, which they talked about the work ethic. They talked about just the personality traits that kind of are, I don't want to say a turnoff, but things that NFL GMs can pick up on. I think he has all the measurables and all the tools when it comes to arm strength. I think he needs to kind of turn himself more into a passer as opposed to a thrower. That's the big knock on him, as opposed to the other things like the personality traits. But as far as Fromm, like I said before, I just don't know if there was anything he would be able to show unless he turned in a season like he did with his freshman year at Georgia. And I know that they're going to get better receivers there with the Bulldogs this upcoming season, but I just don't know if there was anything that he could have shown that changed his status. Like if he stayed another year, do you really think that he would have been able to put himself a second to third round grade? I don't think so.
No, not at all. 7 Georgia players overall were taken in this year's NFL draft. A ton of SEC players. I mean, good Lord, the SEC dominates the draft yet again. And now it looks like this morning we're finding out Lawrence Cager has signed as an undrafted free agent with the New York Jets. So a couple of undrafted guys getting to go different places. The Jets had an interesting draft as well. And maybe Cager can become a new fan favorite target overall of one Sam Darnold.
Yeah, that was the one thing about their draft. I think that they didn't address the wide receiver position nearly to the level that their fan base wanted them to. I think that they were always kind of like looking at, you know, when you look at the draft cast and you see team needs wide receiver. Yeah, they never really fixed that position there for them. They didn't get enough weapons, I think, for Sam Darnold in order to make themselves better at that position. But they needed to try and find a way to protect him. But yeah, Cager goes into a situation where I think he can get some playing time.
Tay Crowder is Mr. Irrelevant in this year's draft, number 255 overall. The final pick in the 2020 NFL draft is going to be a New York Giant. And, you know, listen, you can go compete for a roster spot. And the fact that you're drafted versus being an undrafted free agent kind of protects you from those early training camp roster cuts. Doesn't guarantee it, but it definitely helps out overall. So congrats to Tay Crowder and the rest of the Dogs for getting taken in the NFL draft.
And the other thing, too, about the where all the Dogs kind of ended up, I think they all really kind of ended up in great situations when you think about where they are going to play, especially the linemen. I think that Andrew Thomas is going to be a guy who is going to play for a very, very long time in New York. I think DeAndre Swift with the Lions is going to be a very, very solid pick. Isaiah Wilson basically improves an already stout line for the Tennessee Titans. And again, you mentioned Cager. I know J.R. Reed has an undrafted free agency contract that he signed. Rodrigo Blankenship is going to sign with the Indianapolis Colts. He can compete with the ageless Adam Vinatieri, which is going to be very interesting to look at and watch that particular competition if Vinatieri does decide to play again this season. We also did want to mention a couple of draft picks from Georgia Tech and Georgia Southern. Georgia Tech's Tyler Davis, the tight end, he goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars in round 6. And Georgia Southern also had a couple of draft picks, one cornerback going to Chicago, and then Tyler Bass, the kicker, he goes to Buffalo.
All right, so we know what Will and Thomas think of the Atlanta Falcons draft, especially those first couple of, you know, 1, 2, 3 round picks. Will and I, so far, are in agreement that they are great, but what does Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn think about all of our draft picks? We will hear from not only the head coach, but also the GM and the guys who orchestrated a very good draft overall by our Atlanta Falcons next. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic, hanging out here, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com.
back with more of our look back at the 2020 NFL Draft.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Willie P., Thomas Mott here with you. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. 92.9thegame.com is always on the radio.com app. We're brought to you by Twin Peaks, your home for the 2020 NFL season. Love to hear from you on Twitter, at Willie P. Style on Twitter, as well as Real Thomas Mott on Twitter, at 929 The Game is how you get in touch with the radio station. Got a couple of tweets coming our way. First, our guy Barrett, he says, great job by the Falcons, who did not get cute and addressed the needs and versatility in the draft. Fans don't want injury excuses like we heard for the 2018 season, especially after the Saints went 5-0 last year with backup quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, who's staying in our division, as you know, with the Carolina Panthers. And Jason tweets us. He says, I was definitely hoping they would have taken a tight end with a second, fourth for a little extra competition at the position. And that's one thing that, you know, you and I haven't talked about. I loved the shrewdness, Thomas, of the Hayden Hurst trade. Like, I know that there were a lot of people who were all in their feelings when we lost Austin Hooper to the Cleveland Browns, but I think Hayden Hurst more fits what they can do with the tight end in this position. He turns into, I think, their third best receiver. You know, but between him and Russell Gage, he becomes a very viable option for Matt Ryan on third down. He's got length. He can gain separation. And the one thing about him, and I knew this going all the way back to his time at South Carolina, he has been underutilized in every place he's been, whether it was Baltimore, whether it was with the Gamecocks. They could do more with him every place he's been. And I think with what Matt Ryan can do, with how much he loves throwing to tight ends, I think that he is going to be a stud for the Falcons.
Well, and it's something that we talked about briefly whenever it actually happened. We were so focused on other moves during free agency that I think, like you said, a lot of Falcon fans kind of glossed over it. They were able to not only save money by not paying Austin Hooper, who is a very good tight end, but let's be honest, I think the Browns gave him a lot more money than I would have been comfortable giving him.
Listen, he ain't worth that scratch, Thomas. He ain't worth it.
Listen, it's a lot of money for a tight end who's, what,
right?
The third option on the Falcon squad, maybe the fourth option. Overall, they still get Hayden Hurst, and what it also does is means you didn't have to spend an early draft pick on a tight end. If they had not gotten Hayden Hurst, you would have had to have spent maybe a third-round draft pick, maybe reach in the second. There were some good tight ends here. Clement out of Notre Dame went pretty high to the Bears. I mean, he would have been a good pick overall. But
He'd have been the guy in the second round.
Yeah, but
them.
See, then you would have gotten Marlon Davidson. It saves you from wasting a pick on a need, but a need that would still have been the third option in a Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Matt Ryan-led offense.
Exactly. And Komet actually would not have been on the board where that second round pick would have been, just because he went way before that. He went 11th in the second round, 43rd overall to the Bears. Of course, the tight end on Notre Dame, maybe they would have tried to trade up and get another tight end on the roster. But that's something that, again, to me, I like getting Hurst. I like getting a guy who's been in the league a couple of years at that position as opposed to trying to groom somebody brand new. 404-741-0929. That is our phone number to get in on the show and also the Salmon Brothers Diamond text line. Let's hear from what the coach and the GM had to say over the last couple of days involving our picks. Let's start here where Marlon Davidson, obviously the second-round selection out of Auburn, somebody who has a great pedigree playing games inside the SEC, part of a big defensive line that included the guy Derek Brown who went to the Carolina Panthers. One thing that was told to me is that, you know, the reason Davidson was so good is because he was the reason why teams could not double-team Derek Brown, just because he was such a guy who lived in the backfield. And that's one thing Dan Quinn believes can really be a strength of this team is Davidson's versatility inside and outside.
You saw his versatility. He's been a defensive end. He's been stand-up. He's been down. And we're going to try and feature him over the defensive, you know, at a defensive tackle spot, over the guards as often as we can.
I think that you could not, and again, this is the part of the discussion that we were talking about when it comes to, you know, whether or not you wanted to go D-tackle in the first round. And this is not a knock on Javon Kinlaw or Derek Brown. It's just, I believe you kind of already have that guy in Grady Jarrett. So I don't see the benefit of bringing in a second guy of that ilk to play alongside Grady. You need somebody who has the ability to have inside presence, but also can bump outside when you want to play either a three-down line or more of a pass-rushing type line.
There were a lot of people who thought that A.J. Epenesa out of Iowa was going to be the pick, not in the second round, all the way up at Pitt's number 16 overall. I know that you didn't, but I think a lot of mock drafts had him there, right?
I did not like that guy. I wanted as much separation from that guy as possible. I think he went to Buffalo, right?
Yeah, he went to Buffalo a couple of picks good. Later there.
Keep
the
him there.
Round.
Keep him all the way there. Let him live in Buffalo. And again, nothing against the gentleman personally, but I mean, when I remember when the mocks had him at 16 just because of where we were at a need perspective. And then when I saw him in the combine, I'm like, I don't like this guy at all. And again, I know the combine, I'm always kind of the biggest critic of people who think like this and say, you know, the combine can change your mind about a guy's film. That's the thing. He didn't even have good film either. Yeah. So it's like, you know, what are we talking about here?
Going back to Marlon Davidson there in the second round and mentioning just being able to move him around the defensive line. This is kind of the new thing that we're expecting defensive tackles to do in the National Football League, at least the good ones, right? You think about some of the good defensive tackles in the league right now, and again, Marlon Davidson can be both on the outside and the inside, although probably a little more inside than outside. Fletcher Cox in Philadelphia, they line him up on the inside, they'll move him outside as well and get him one-on-one with a bad right tackle, for instance, and he just mauls them to death. And you think about Aaron Donald, and again, Marlon Davidson is not Aaron Donald, but they do the kind of similar things where they'll move Aaron Donald around, they move J.J. Watt around, they move Gerald McCoy around. This is the kind of mold I think Atlanta is hoping, and now they hope it's Fletcher Cox, and they hope that he turns into a Gerald McCoy. But you can see how, in the modern National Football League, just getting a every three-down defensive tackle like Grady Jarrett is good, but to have a guy that you can kind of mix and match and get different packages with, gone are the days to, here are my starting four defensive linemen, they will play the majority of the snaps, and whenever they are eventually tired, we'll kind of switch people in. Now it's, we're going to throw, you know, eight guys on there and kind of move them around anywhere, and the flexibility of Marlon Davidson there, not only in round two, but also on the defensive line, to me, is why, again, we keep looking at this draft, and that's why the Falcon Twitter has been so quiet, right? Everyone's like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, there are people who are going to be angry no matter what they did, so that's kind of the way that a lot of the social media aspects work, but I think for the most part, a lot of Falcon fans are genuinely pleased because they filled the needs that they did. Willie P. and Thomas Mott here with you on the Salton Brothers Diamond Text line, as well as on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's what Dan Quinn had to say about the other pick that was taken on Friday. Matt Hennessy, the guard/center out of Temple, one thing that they were able to use and utilize is the connection that they have with current Georgia Tech head coach Jeff Collins, who coached Hennessy when he was at Temple.
It was nice to get a text from Jeff tonight, how excited he was to have Matt, you know, coming down to the A. So he knew what a special competitor he is, and so yeah, we had spoken to him, obviously, about that, you know, the group that he had and the insight that he could provide towards us. So it's been a good relationship for us.
Hennessy is a guy who, again, he could possibly be a cog in what has basically become a black hole position for the Falcons. That left guard, the rotation there of Wes Schweitzer, who's now gone, and James Carpenter. You know, people have talked about Matt Gano possibly getting a shot to play there. And, of course, you think about him possibly being the heir apparent to Alex Mack when he does decide to hang it up. He's somebody who, if you listen to his interview with Andy and Randy yesterday, real cerebral guy, typical offensive lineman, could have gone to the Ivy League when it comes to his academics, but instead wanted to play football at a higher level. And I think he's somebody where you're not going to question the guy's smarts on the field.
Well, and at the same time, I think it goes back to how people view the NFL draft. You hear third round, you hear second round, you kind of automatically go, well, you spent a third round draft pick. That's some high draft capital. He better be an instant impact player. And in reality, it's just not exactly how it goes in the National Football League. Here's a guy in Hennessy you bring in. You can let him compete, and heck, if he does, then maybe he starts at left guard to start the season. If not, though, you can groom him underneath Alex Mack, and then eventually, maybe next year, maybe 2 years down the line, he becomes a plug-and-play starter for the Atlanta Falcons. It just goes to, yes, he's a third-round draft pick. Yes, a third-round draft pick, you would hope, can be an established starter sooner rather than later, but like most of these Atlanta Falcon picks, at least after the third round, it's like, okay, he fills the need whenever the need actually becomes a true need, which at least in the center and left guard spot, maybe it's now, maybe it's a little bit later.
One of the easiest sells, I think, for the Falcons is going to be getting fans to fall in love with A.J. Terrell. And something about being from this city resonates with this fan base as much, especially when you think about the homegrown Atlanta people. I know that we live in a very transient city with people from all over the place, you and me included, but you know, people who are from Atlanta and know what it's like to be from here and represent this city, not just here, but everywhere else. It means something a little bit extra special to have a homegrown Atlanta player coming back to the A to play for the Falcons. I think that was very evident when we heard AJ Terrell speak on Dukes and Bell Friday. If you missed any part of that, by the way, you can listen to it via the radio.com app and also at 929thegame.com. The one thing, though, that obviously was a concern for Falcons fans, at least who saw the pick, was the performance he had against Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, and the defending champion LSU Tigers. That was not something that concerned Falcons GM Thomas Dimitro.
No, that performance wouldn't have dissuaded us at all. I mean, he was in phase quite a bit. I mean, Burrow's obviously had a hell of a game, dropped the ball in a lot. There were a couple opportunities there, you know, that they really capitalized on. We look at the full picture, as you can imagine. He had a great, you know, very substantial game in the national championship, you know, the year before, Alabama game, number of other games where he really, you know, stood out in our mind. So one game does not dissuade us.
And again, he's another guy, Thomas, where, you know, I think you think about cornerbacks and offensive linemen in the same way. Like, if you don't hear their name called a lot during a game, it means that they're either not being thrown to or not getting called for penalties. So that part of it is like they're not messing up and they're not being called for penalties. That part of it, I think, is something that was very evident about Terrell and his time at Clemson.
People do need to realize just how good Ja'Marr Chase is. And, of course, that's the wide receiver from LSU who everyone looks back to as torching A.J. Terrell. Like, this is a guy who in Sporting News' 2021 mock draft, which I know, 2021 mock draft, very far away, is the fifth player off the board. Ja'Marr Chase is going to be the best receiver taken in next year's NFL draft. He caught 20 touchdowns this year. It should not be a surprise that he had a good game against A.J. Terrell. What's funny, though, is we go and think about A.J. Terrell, you know, getting torched by Ja'Marr Chase in the LSU championship game, and then we spin right around and go, but he did pick off Tua in the Natty a couple of years ago. But if you actually watch that play, and this is not a knock on A.J. Terrell, I'm just saying, people are going back to saying he did pick off Tua. That was a very poorly thrown football by Tua Tagovailoa that was behind the intended receiver that kind of just ended up in Terrell's arms. Again, you can't just grade somebody on one interception here or one bad game there against LSU.
It's still a touchdown on the board,
Tommy. It still counts.
And again, you know, I remember watching that game too and thinking that, you know, Terrell was in the right place at the right time and Tua just had a poorly thrown football. But again, it's something to be said for positioning. And I also believe that, and this goes back to kind of what we said about Marlon Davidson. I think you could say the same thing about Terrell, is that, you know, he comes from a winning program. He is a winner, and he had one of the best defensive minds utilizing him in Brent Venables. And I think that's why you see a lot of Clemson defenders off the board. That's why you saw Isaiah Simmons have the kind of college career he has, because it wasn't just because of the fact that he brings a unique skill set, but he had a defensive mind behind him that put him in positions where you can play winning football. And that's, I think, one thing that we look at and say, okay, the Falcons centered around guys who knew how to be utilized in multiple ways by the staffs. And again, that versatility, if there's one aspect of this draft that I think you can say for all these players, it's the versatility.
They're versatile, and they should, I think, make a lot of Atlanta Falcons fans happy overall in terms of what the future looks like in Atlanta. Although I will say this, and this is something we'll talk about probably in the days and weeks to come, and we're obviously going to talk about the rest of the NFC South a little bit later on in this show. The Falcons, you look at the roster and you go, you know what? Like, I feel pretty good about it. Overall, if you go top to bottom, looking at the Atlanta Falcons roster, which is basically completed now, unless they make some sort of other weird offseason moves, it looks pretty good, and it looks a lot better than where we were standing at this point last year, especially that front four.
I feel infinitely better about the 2020 Falcons going into the season than I did about the 2019 Falcons. And I felt pretty good about the 2019 Falcons, and I think we all kind of did until after the Eagle game, and then, you know, the 1-7 start, no one felt good at all. I feel a lot better about this team now than I did, say, a year ago at this time. Willie P, Thomas Mott here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're brought to you by Twin Peaks, your home for the 2020 NFL season. Coming up in our next hour, we'll start to hear from some of the coaches of the Falcon draft picks. Justin Wilcox, the head coach of the California Golden Bears, is going to join us about 50 minutes from right now. 11:40 is when he'll join us. We'll talk to him about Falcons fourth round pick, Jalen Hawkins. We're also going to talk to the man who coached Michael Walker, his position coach, later on in the program, Bert Watts, who is now the linebacker coach at Memphis, but was with Walker at Fresno State. How'd the rest of the division do? Well, a lot of offensive linemen taking places that have stout quarterbacks. And do you feel the Carolina Panthers are a threat based on their draft and looking at their off seasons as well? Willie P and Thomas Mott, one of the books, three to play. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this Sunday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.